almost lost her. Now it didn't matter. As much as he cared about them, as glad as he was to see them, if his own family wouldn't accept her along with him, then he'd leave. It was Ayla he loved. Together they had much to offer. Several caves had already asked them to stay and live with them, including Dalinar's Lanzadanyi. He was sure they could find a home, somewhere. The Danyar knew something had passed between Ayla and Jandalar, some kind of approval or affirmation. It made her curious, but she had learned that observation and patience often satisfied her curiosity better than questions. Ayla turned to look at Zalandani to answer.
Kreb was Mogur of Brun's clan, the one who knew the spirit world, but he was more than just Mogur. He was like you, Zalandani. He was, first, the Mogur of the whole clan, but to me, Kreb was man of my hearth, though I wasn't born there, and the woman he lived with, Issa, was his sibling, not his mate. Kreb never had mate.
Who or what is the clan? Zalandani asked. She noticed that Ayla's accent got thicker when she spoke of them.
The clan is... I was adopted by the clan. They are the ones who took me in when I was alone. Kreb and Issa took care of me, raised me. Issa was mother, only mother I remember. And she was medicine woman, healer. Issa was first, too, in a way. She was most respected of all medicine women, as her mother and her grandmother had been, all the way back in unbroken line to beginning of clan.
Is that where you learned your healing skills? Zalandani asked, leaning forward on the cushions.
Yes, Issa taught me, even though I wasn't her true daughter, and didn't have her memories like Uba did. Uba was my sister, not a true sibling, but still my sister.
What happened to your real mother, your family, the people you were born to? Zalandani wanted to know. Everyone was curious, fascinated, but they let her ask the questions. Ayla sat back and looked up, as though trying to find an answer. Then she looked at the large woman who was regarding her so intently.
I don't know. I don't remember. I was young. Issa guessed that I could count 5 years, although they didn't have counting words like Zalandani. The clan named the years beginning as babies. The first was the birthing year, then the nursing year, the weaning year, and so on. I put it into counting words, she tried to explain.
Then she stopped. She couldn't explain everything, tell her whole life with the clan. It would be better to just answer the questions.
You don't remember anything about your own people? Zalandani pressed.
I only know what Issa told me. An earthquake had destroyed their cave, and Brun's clan was looking for a new one when she found me beside a river, unconscious. They had been without a home for some time, but Brun allowed her to take me with them. She said I must have been attacked by a cave lion because there were 4 claw marks on my leg with the wide spacing of a cave lion, and they were running. Poisoned. Corrupted.
Ayla tried to find the right words.
Yes, I understand, the Danyar said. Festered, suppurant, perhaps to the stage of morbid corruption. Cat claws tend to do that.
I still have the scars. That's how Kreb knew the cave lion was my totem, even though it's usually a man's totem. I still dream sometimes of being in a small dark place and seeing a big cat claw coming.
That's a powerful dream. Do you have any other dreams? About that time in your life, I mean?
One that's more frightening, but hard to explain. I never quite remember it. It's more a feeling of an earthquake.
The young woman shuddered.
I hate earthquakes.
Zalandani nodded knowingly.
Any others?
No. Yes, but only once, when Jandalar was still recovering and was teaching me to speak.
Zalandani thought that was a peculiar way to phrase it, and glanced at Marthona to see if she had noted the odd expression.
I understood some,
Ayla said. I had learnt many words, but I was having trouble putting all together. Then I dreamed of my mother, my real mother. I saw her face, and she spoke to me. The learning was easier after that.
Ah, that's a very important dream, the one who served commented. It's always important when the mother comes to you in your dreams, whatever form she takes, but particularly when she takes the form of your own mother, speaking to you from the next world.
Jondalar recalled a dream he had had of the mother when they were still in Ayla's valley. A very strange dream. I should tell Zelandani about it sometime, he thought.
So, if you dreamed of the mother, why didn't you appeal to her to help Thonalin find his way in the next world? I don't understand why you called upon the spirit of a cave bear and not the Great Earth Mother.
I didn't know about the Great Earth Mother until Jondalar told me, after I learned your language.
You didn't know about Dani? About the Great Earth Mother?
Falara asked with amazement. None of the Zelandangi had ever heard of anyone who did not recognize the Great Mother in some name or form. They were all mystified.
The clan honors Ursus, the great cave bear, she said. That's why I called on Ursus, to help guide the spirit of the dead man. I didn't know his name then, even though he wasn't clan. I did ask the spirit of the cave lion to help, too, since he was my totem.
Well, if you didn't know her, then you did what you could under the circumstances.
I'm sure it helped, Zelandani said, but she was more concerned than she showed. How could any of her children not know the mother?
I have a totem, too, Willemar said. Mine is the golden eagle.
He sat up a little straighter.
My mother told me that when I was an infant, an eagle picked me up and tried to carry me away, but she grabbed me and held on. I still show the scars. The Zelandani told her that the golden eagle spirit recognized me as one of his own kind. Not many people have personal totems, not among the Zelandani. But if you have one, it is thought to be lucky.
Well, you were lucky enough to get away, Joharan said.
I guess I was lucky enough to get away from the cave lion that marked me, Ayla said, and so was Jondalar. I think his totem is the cave lion, too. What do you think, Zelandani?
Ayla had been telling Jondalar that the cave lion's spirit had chosen him ever since she could talk to him, but he had always avoided any comment about it. It seemed that individual totems weren't as important to his people as they were to the clan, but it was important to her. She didn't want to take any chances. The clan believed that a man's totem had to be stronger than a woman's totem for her to have children. That was why her strong male totem had upset Issa so. In spite of her powerful totem, Ayla did have a son. But there had been difficulties beginning in pregnancy, during his birth, and many believed afterward. They were sure he was unlucky, that his mother had no mate, no man to raise him properly, confirmed it. The difficulties and misfortune were blamed on the fact that she was a woman with a male totem. Now that she was pregnant again, she wanted no problems for this child that Jondalar had started, not for her or the baby. Though she had learned a great deal about the mother, she had not forgotten clan teachings, and if Jondalar's totem was a cave lion like hers, then she was sure it would be strong enough for her to have a healthy baby who would have a normal life. Something in Ayla's tone of voice caught Zelandani's attention. She looked closely at the young woman. She wants Jondalar to have a cave lion totem, the woman realized. It is very important to her, this totem. Totem spirits must have greater significance to these clan people who raised her. It probably is true that the cave lion is his totem now, and it won't hurt him if people think he's lucky. He probably is to have gotten back at all.
I believe you're right, Ayla, the Danyer said. Jondalar can claim the cave lion as his totem and claim the luck. He was very lucky you were there when he needed you.
I told you, Jondalar.
Ayla said, looking relieved.
Why does she, or this clan, put so much importance on the spirit of the cave lion? or the cave bear, Zelandani wondered. All the spirits are important, those of animals, even those of plants or insects, everything. But it is the Great Mother who gave birth to them all. Who are these people, this clan?
You did say you lived alone in a valley, didn't you? Where was this clan that raised you, Ayla?
The Danyar asked.
Yes, I'd like to know, too. Didn't Jandalar introduce you as Ayla of the Mamutoi?
Joharan said.
You said you didn't know the mother, but you greeted us with a welcome from the Great Mother of All, which is one of the names we give, Dani,
Falara added. Ayla looked from one to the other, then at Jandalar, feeling a touch of panic. There was a hint of a grin on his face, as though he was rather enjoying the way Ayla's truthful answers baffled everyone. He squeezed her hand again, but didn't say anything. He was interested in how she would respond. She relaxed a bit.
My clan lived at the south end of the land that extended far into the barren sea. Issa told me just before she died that I should look for my own people. She said they lived north, on the mainland. But when I finally did look for them, I couldn't find anyone. The summer was half over before I found the valley, and I was afraid that the cold season would come and I wouldn't be prepared for it. The valley was a good place, protected from winds, a small river, lots of plants and animals, even a small cave. I decided to stay for the winter, and ended up staying for 3 years, with only Winnie and Baby for company. Maybe I was waiting for Jandalar, she said, smiling at the man. I found him in late spring. It was near the end of summer before Jandalar was well enough to travel. We decided to make a small trek, explore the region. We made camp each night in a different place, going farther from the valley than I had gone before. Then we met Talut, the headman of the lion camp, and he invited us to visit. We stayed with them until the beginning of the next summer, and while I was there, they adopted me. They wanted Jandalar to stay too and become one of them, but even then he was planning to return.
Well, I'm glad he did, Marthona said.
It seems you are very lucky to have people so willing to adopt you, Zelandani said.
Zelandani couldn't help but wonder at the strange story Ayla was telling. She wasn't alone in her reservations. It all seemed rather far-fetched, and she still had more questions than answers.
At first, I'm sure it was Nezi's idea. She was Talut's mate. I think she convinced him because I helped Rydek when he had a bad problem. Rydek was weak in...
Ayla didn't know the correct words and was frustrated. Jandalar had never taught them to her. He could have given her precise words for various kinds of flint, and specific words for the processes of shaping it into tools and weapons. But medicinal and healing terminology was not a part of his normal vocabulary. She turned to him and spoke to him in Mamutoi.
What is your word for foxglove, that plant I always collected for Rydek?
He told her, but even before Ayla could repeat it and attempt to explain, Zelandani was sure she understood what had happened. As soon as she heard Jandalar say the word, she knew not only the plant, but its uses. She had a good idea that the person Ayla was talking about had an internal weakness with the organ that pumped blood, the heart, that could be helped by the proper extraction of elements from foxglove. It also made her realize why someone would want to adopt a healer who was skilled enough to know how to use something as beneficial, though potentially dangerous, as that plant. And if that someone was in a position of authority, as a headman's mate would be, she could understand how Ayla might be adopted so quickly. After listening to Ayla tell essentially what she had guessed, she made another assumption.
This person, Rydek, was a child?
She asked, to confirm her final speculation.
Yes,
Ayla replied, feeling a moment of sadness. Zelandani felt she understood about Ayla and the Mamutoi, but the clan still left her perplexed. She decided to try a different approach.
I know you are very skilled in the healing ways, Ayla, but often those who become knowledgeable have a mark of some kind, so people will recognize them, like "This one," she said, touching a tattoo on her forehead above her left temple. "I see no mark on you."
Ayla looked closely at the tattoo. It was a rectangle divided into 6 smaller rectangles, almost squares, in 2 rows of 3 each, with 4 legs above that, which, if connected, would have made a 3rd row of squares. The outline of the rectangles was dark, but 3 of the squares were filled in with shades of red and 1 with yellow. Although it was a unique mark, several of the people she had seen had tattooed markings of one kind or another, including Marthona, Joharan, and Willemar. She didn't know if the marks meant something in particular, but after Zelandani had explained the meaning of hers, Ayla suspected they might.
"Mahmut had a mark on his cheek," Ayla said, touching the place on her cheek. "All the Mahmuti did. Some had other marks, too. I might have been given one had I stayed. Mahmut started training me soon after he adopted me, but I was not fully trained before I left, so I was never marked."
"But didn't you say you were adopted by the woman who was the mate of the headman?"
"I thought Nezi was going to adopt me, and she did too. But at the ceremony, Mahmut said Mammoth Hearth, not Lion Hearth. He adopted me instead."
"This Mahmut is one who serves the mother?" Zelandani asked, thinking. "So she was training to be one who serves."
"Yes, like you. The Mammoth Hearth was his, and for those who serve the mother. Most people choose the Mammoth Hearth, or feel they have been chosen. Mahmut said I was born to it."
She flushed a little and looked aside, feeling rather embarrassed to be talking about something that had been given, which she hadn't earned. It made her think of Issa and how carefully the woman had tried to train her to be a good clan woman.
"I think your Mahmut was a wise man," Zelandani said. "But you said you learned your healing skills from a woman of the people who raised you, this clan. Don't they do anything to mark their healers, to give them status and recognition?"
"I was given a certain black stone, a special sign to keep in my amulet when I was accepted as a medicine woman of the clan," Ayla said. "But they don't make a mark like a tattoo for medicine woman, only for totem when a boy becomes a man."
"How do people recognize one when they need to call upon a healer for help?"
Ayla hadn't thought about that before. She paused to consider it.
"Medicine women don't have to be marked. People know. A medicine woman has status in her own right. Her position is always recognized. Issa was the highest-ranked woman in the clan, even higher than Brun's mate."
Zelandani shook her head. Ayla obviously thought she had explained something, but the woman didn't understand.
"I'm sure that's true. But how do people know?"
"By her position," Ayla repeated, then tried to clarify. "By the position she takes when the clan goes somewhere, the place she stands when she eats, by the sign she uses when she talks, by the signals that are made to her when she's addressed."
"Isn't that all so awkward, this cumbersome use of positions and signs?"
Zelandani asked.
"Not for them. That's the way people of the clan talk, with signs. They don't talk with words, as we do," Ayla said.
"But why not?" Marthona wanted to know.
"They can't. They can't make all the sounds we do. They can make some, but not all. They talk with their hands and their bodies," Ayla tried to explain.
Jondalar could see the bewilderment of his mother and kin growing, and Ayla getting more frustrated. He decided it was time to cut the confusion. "Ayla was raised by Flathead's mother," he said. There was a stunned silence.
"Flatheads? Flatheads are animals,"
Joharan said.
"No, they're not," Jondalar said.
"Of course they are," Falara said. "They can't talk."
"They can talk. They just don't talk the way you do," Jondalar said. "I can even talk their language a little. But of course Ayla is much better. When she said I taught her to speak, she meant it."
He glanced at Zelandani. He'd noted her earlier expression. She forgot how to speak whatever language she knew when she was a child. She could only speak the clan way. The clan are flatheads. Flatheads call themselves the clan.
How could they call themselves anything if they talk with their hands?
Falara asked.
They do have some words, Ayla repeated. They just can't say everything. They don't even hear all the sounds we make. They could understand if they started young, but they're not used to hearing them.
She thought about Rydag. He could understand everything that was said, even if he couldn't say it.
Well, I didn't know they called themselves by any name,
Marthona said. Then she thought of something else.
How did you and Ayla communicate, Jandalar?
We didn't at first, he said. In the beginning, of course, we didn't need to. Ayla knew what to do. I was hurt, and she took care of me.
Are you telling me, Jandalar, that she learned from flatheads how to heal that cave lion mauling?
Zelandani said. Ayla answered instead.
I told you, Issa came from the most respected line of medicine women in the clan. She taught me.
I find all this about intelligent flatheads very difficult to believe, Zelandani said.
I don't, Willemar said.
Everybody turned to look at the trade master.
I don't think they're animals at all. I haven't for a long time. I've seen too many in my travels. Why haven't you said something before?
Joharan asked.
It never came up, Willemar said. No one ever asked, and I never thought about it that much.
What changed your mind about them, Willemar? Zelandani asked. This brought out a new aspect. She was going to have to put some thought into this startling idea Jandalar and the foreign woman had presented.
Let me think. The first time I began to doubt they were animals was many years ago,
Willemar began.
I was south and west of here, traveling alone. The weather had changed quickly, a sudden cold snap, and I was in a hurry to get home. I kept going until it was almost dark, and camped beside a small stream. I planned to cross in the morning. When I woke up, I discovered I had stopped right across from a party of flatheads. I was actually afraid of them, you know what you hear. So I watched them closely, to be prepared in case they decided to come after me.
What did they do?
Joharan asked.
Nothing, except break camp, just like anyone would,
Willemar said.
They knew I was there, of course, but I was alone, so I couldn't give them much trouble, and they didn't seem in a big hurry. They boiled some water and made something hot to drink, rolled up their tents, different from ours, lower to the ground and harder to see. But they packed them on their backs and left at a fast jog.
Could you tell if any were women? Ayla asked.
It was pretty cold. They were all covered. They do wear clothes. You don't notice it in summer because they don't wear much, and you seldom see them in winter. We don't tend to travel much then, or very far, and they probably don't either.
You're right. They don't like to go too far from home when it's cold or snowy, Ayla commented.
Most had beards. I'm not sure if they all did,
Willemar said.
Young men don't have beards. Did you notice if any of them carried a basket on her back?
I don't think so, he said.
Clan women don't hunt, but if the men go on a long trek, women often go along to dry the meat and carry it back, so it was probably a short-range hunting party, just men, Ayla said.
Did you do that? Falara asked. Go along on long hunting trips?
Yes. I even went along once when they hunted a mammoth, Ayla said, but not to hunt.
Jandalar noticed that everyone seemed more curious than closed-minded, though he was sure many people would be more intolerant. At least his kin seemed interested in learning about flatheads, the clan.
Joharan,
Jandalar said.
I'm glad this came up now, because I was planning to talk to you anyway. There's something you need to know. We met a clan couple on our way here, just before we started over that plateau glacier to the east. They told us that several clans are planning to get together to talk about us and the problems they've been having with us. They call us the Others.
I'm having trouble believing they can call us anything,
the man said.
much less have meetings to talk about us. Well, believe it, because if you don't, we could be in some trouble.
Several voices spoke at once.
What do you mean?
What kind of trouble?
I know of one situation in the Los Adunai region. A gang of young ruffians from several caves started baiting flatheads, clan men. I understand they started out several years ago by picking on just one, like running a rhino down. But clan men are nothing to fool with. They're smart and they're strong. A couple of those young men found that out when one or two got caught, so they started picking on the women. Clan women don't fight, usually, so it wasn't as much fun, no challenge. To make it more interesting, they started forcing clan women to... Well, I wouldn't call it pleasures.
What?
Joharan said.
You heard me right, Jandalar affirmed.
Great mother,
Zelandani blurted.
That's terrible,
Marthona said at the same time.
How awful,
Falara cried, wrinkling her nose with disgust.
Despicable,
Willemar spat.
They think so too,
Jandalar said. They're not going to put up with it much longer, and once they realize they can do something about it, they're not going to put up with much from us at all. Aren't there rumors that these caves used to belong to them? What if they want them back?
Those are rumors, Jandalar. There's nothing in the histories or the elder legends to confirm it,
Zelandani said.
Only bears are mentioned.
Ayla didn't say anything, but she thought the rumors might be true.
In any case, they aren't getting them,
Joharan said.
This is our home, Zelandani territory.
But there's something else you should know that could work in our favor. According to Guban, that was the man's name.
They have names?
Of course they have names,
Ayla said,
just like the people in my clan. His name is Guban. Hers is Yora.
Ayla gave the names the true clan pronunciation, with the full, throaty, deep, guttural sounds. Jandalar smiled. She did that on purpose, he thought.
If that's how they speak, I certainly know where her accent comes from, Zelandani thought.
She must be telling the truth. She was raised by them. But did she really learn her medicine from them?
What I was trying to say, Joharan, is that Guban...
His pronunciation was much easier to understand.
Told me that some people, I don't know which caves, have approached some clans with the idea of establishing trading relations.
Trading? With flatheads?
Joharan said.
Why not?
Willemar said.
I think it could be interesting. Depends what they have to trade, of course.
Sounds like the trade master talking,
Jandalar said.
Speaking of trading... What are the Los Adunai doing about those young men?
Willemar wanted to know.
We trade with them. I'd hate to have some trading party come down off the other side of that glacier and walk into a party of flatheads with revenge on their minds.
I first heard about it, 5 years ago, they weren't doing much,
Jandalar said, trying to avoid making reference to Thonolin.
They knew it was going on. Some of the men were still calling it high spirits, but Leduni became really upset just talking about it. Then it got worse. We stopped to visit the Los Adunai on our way back. The clan men had started going out with their women when they were gathering food, guarding them. And those high-spirited young men weren't going to provoke the clan men by going after the women then, so they went after a young woman of Leduni's cave, all of them. Forced a young woman before first rites.
Oh, no! How could they, Jande?
Falara said, bursting into tears.
Great Mother's Underground,
Joharan thundered.
That's just where they should be sent,
Willemar said.
They are abominations. I can't even imagine a strong enough punishment,
Zelandani fumed. Marthona, unable to say anything, had her hand on her chest and looked appalled. Ayla had felt deeply for the young woman who had been assaulted and had tried to ease her anguish, but she couldn't help but notice how much more strongly Jandalar's kin had reacted to the news of a young woman of the others being attacked by the gang than they had when they learned of the attacks on clan women. When it was clan women, they were offended, but when it was one of their own, they were outraged.
That, more than anything that had been said or done, made her understand the extent of the chasm that separated the two peoples. Then she wondered what their reactions would have been, inconceivable as the idea was to her, if it had been a gang of clan men, flatheads, that had committed such an abominable act on Zelindanyi women.
"You can be sure the Los Adunai are doing something about those young men now,"
Jandalar said.
"The young woman's mother was crying for blood retribution against the cave of the leader of those degenerate men."
"Ah, that's bad news. What a difficult situation for the leaders," Marthona said.
"It's her right,"
Folara proclaimed.
"Yes, of course, it's her right," Marthona said. "But then some kin or another, or the whole cave, will resist, and that could lead to fighting, maybe someone getting killed. And then someone wants revenge for that. Who knows where it would end up? What are they going to do, Jandalar?"
"Several cave leaders sent runners with messages, and many of them got together and talked. They've agreed to send out trackers, find the young men, separate them to break up the gang, and then each cave is going to deal with their own member individually. They will be severely punished, I imagine. But they'll be given a chance to make restitution,"
Jandalar explained.
"I'd say that's a good plan, especially if they all agree to it, including the cave of the instigator,"
Joharan said.
"And if the young men come peaceably, once they've been found..."
"I'm not sure about the leader, but I think the rest of them want to go home and would agree to anything to be allowed back. They looked hungry, cold, and dirty, and not too happy,"
Jandalar said.
"You saw them?" Marthona asked.
"That's how we met the clan couple. The gang had gone after the woman. They didn't see the man around, but he had climbed up on a high rock to scout game and jumped down when they attacked his woman, broke his leg, but it didn't stop him from trying to fight them off. We happened upon them then. It was not far from the glacier we were getting ready to cross."
Jandalar smiled.
"Between Ayla, Wolf, and me, not to mention the two clan people, we chased them off in a hurry. There's not much fight left in those boys. And with Wolf and the horses, and the fact that we knew who they were, when they had never seen us before. Well, I think we put a scare in them."
"Yes," Zelindani said thoughtfully. "I can see how it would."
"You would have scared me," Joharan said with a wry smile.
"Then Ayla convinced the clan man to let her set his broken leg,"
Jandalar continued.
"We camped together for a couple of days. I made him a couple of sticks to lean on and help him walk, and he decided to go home. I was able to talk to him a little, though Ayla did most of it. I think I became something like a brother to him," he said.
"It occurs to me," Marthona said, "that if there is a possibility of trouble with, what do they call themselves, clan people, and they can communicate enough to negotiate, it could be very helpful to have someone like Ayla around who can talk to them, Joharan."
"I've been thinking the same thing," Zelindani added. She had also been thinking about what Jandalar had said of the fearful effect Ayla's animals had on people, though she didn't mention it. It could be useful.
"That's true, of course, Mother. But it's going to be hard to get used to the idea of talking to flatheads or calling them something else. And I'm not the only one who's going to have trouble,"
Joharan said. He paused, then shook his head as if to himself.
"If they talk with their hands, how do you know they're really talking and not just waving their arms around?"
Everyone looked at Ayla. She turned to Jandalar.
"I think you should show them," he said.
"And maybe you could talk at the same time, the way you did when you were talking to Guban and translating for me."
"What should I say?"
"Why not just greet them, as if you were speaking for Guban," he said.
Ayla thought for a time. She couldn't really greet them the way Guban would. He was a man, and a woman would never greet anyone the same way a man would. She could make a greeting sign. That gesture was always the same. But one never made only a greeting sign. It was always modified, depending on who was making it and to whom it was being made. And there really was no sign for a person of the clan to greet one of the others. It had never been done before, not in a formal, acknowledged way.
Perhaps she could think of how it would be done if they ever had to. She stood up and backed into the clear area in the middle of the main room. "This woman would greet you, people of the others," Ayla began, then paused. "Or perhaps one should say, people of the mother," she said, trying to think of how the clan might make the signs.
"Try children of the mother, or children of the great earth mother," Jandalar suggested.
She nodded and started over. "This woman, called Ayla, would greet you, children of Dani, the great earth mother." She said her own name, and that of the mother, in verbal sounds, but with the inflection and tonal quality of the clan. The rest was communicated with signs in formal clan language and spoken in Zelandanyi. "This woman would hope that at some time you would be greeted by one of the clan of the Cave Bear, and that the greeting would be returned. The Mogur told this woman the clan is ancient. The memories go deep. The clan was here when the new ones came. They named the new ones the others, the ones who were not clan. The clan chose to go their own way, to avoid the others. That is the clan way, and clan traditions change slowly. Yet some of the clan would begin to change, would make new traditions. If that is to be, this woman would hope that the change would harm neither clan nor others." Her Zelandanyi translation was spoken in a soft-voiced monotone, with as much precision and as little accent as she could. The words told them what she was saying, but they could see that she was not making random hand-wavings. The purposeful gestures, the subtle motion of the body indicating a movement, lifting the head in pride, bowing in acquiescence, even raising an eyebrow, all flowed together smoothly with graceful intention. Though the significance of each motion was not clear, that her movements had meaning was. The total effect was startling and beautiful. It sent a shiver down Marthona's back. She glanced at Zelandani, who caught her quick look and nodded. She, too, had felt something profound. Jandalar noticed the discreet byplay. He was watching those who were watching Ayla and could see the impression she was making. Joharan was staring in rapt attention, with a frown creasing his forehead. Willemar had a slight smile and was nodding approval. Falara's smile was unabashed. She was so delighted he had to smile, too. When she was done, Ayla sat down at the table again, lowering herself to a cross-legged position with an elegant ease that was more noticeable after her performance. There was an uneasy silence around the table. No one knew quite what to say, and each felt they needed time to think. Finally, Falara felt constrained to fill the void.
"That was wonderful, Ayla. Beautiful. Almost like a dance," she said.
"It's hard for me to think of it that way. It's the way they talk. Although I remember that I used to love to watch the storytellers," Ayla said.
"It was very expressive," Marthona said, then looked at her son. "You can do that too, Jandalar."
"Not like Ayla can. She taught the people of Lion Camp so they could communicate with Rydag. They had some fun at their summer meeting with it, because they could talk to each other without anyone else knowing it," he said.
"Rydag? Wasn't that the child with the bad heart?" Zelandani asked. "Why couldn't he talk like everyone else?"
Jandalar and Ayla looked at each other.
"Rydag was half-clan, and had the same difficulty making sounds that they do," Ayla said. "So I taught him and the Lion Camp his language."
"Half clan," Joharan said. "You mean half flathead? A half flathead abomination?"
"He was a child," Ayla said, glaring at him in anger. "Just like any other child. No child is an abomination."
Joharan was surprised at her reaction, then recalled that she had been raised by them and understood why she would feel offended. He tried to stutter an apology.
"I'm sorry. It's what everyone thinks."
Zelandani stepped in to calm the situation.
"Ayla, you must remember, we haven't had time to consider everything you've said. We've always thought of your clan people as animals, and something half-human and half-animal as
an abomination. I'm sure you must be correct. This Rydag was a child.
She's right, Ayla said to herself, and it isn't as if you didn't know how the Zelandanyi felt. Jondalar made that clear the first time you mentioned Durk. She tried to compose herself.
But I'd like to understand something, Zelandani continued, searching for a way to ask her questions without offending the stranger. The person named Nezi was the mate of the headman of the lion camp. Is that correct?
Yes.
Ayla could see where she was leading and glanced at Jondalar. She felt sure he was trying to repress a smile. It made her feel better. He knew, too, and was taking some perverse delight in the discomfiture of the powerful Danyer.
This child, this Rydag, was hers?
Jondalar almost wished Ayla would say yes, just to make them think. It had taken a lot for him to overcome the beliefs of his people, bred into him since childhood, practically with his mother's milk. If they thought a woman who had given birth to an abomination could become the mate of a headman, it might shake that belief a bit, and the more he thought about it, the more he was convinced that for their own good, for their own safety, his people had to change, had to accept the fact that the clan were people too.
She nursed him, Ayla explained, along with her own daughter. He was the son of a clan woman who was alone and died shortly after his birth. Nezi adopted him, just as Issa adopted me, when I had no one to take care of me.
It was still a shock, and in some ways even more startling, because the headman's mate had voluntarily chosen to care for the newborn, who could have been left to die with its mother. A silence descended upon the group as they paused to consider what had just been learned. Wolf had stayed behind in the valley where the horses were grazing to explore the new territory. After a time that was appropriate to him and for his own reasons, he decided to return to the place that Ayla had made him understand was home, the place he should go when he wanted to find her. Like all of his kind, the wolf moved with efficient speed and such effortless grace, he seemed to be floating as he loped through the wooded landscape. Several people were in Wood River Valley picking berries. One man caught a glimpse of Wolf moving like a silent wraith between the trees.
"That wolf is coming, and he's by himself," the man shouted.
He scrambled out of the way as fast as he could.
"Where's my baby?"
a woman cried in a panic. She looked around, saw her toddler, and ran to pick her up and carry her away. When Wolf reached the path that led to the ledge, he ran up it with the same supple, fast-moving pace.
"There's that wolf! I don't like the idea of a wolf coming up here right onto our ledge," another woman said.
"Joharan said we should allow him to come and go as he wants, but I'm going to go get my spear," a man said. "Maybe he won't hurt anyone, but I don't trust that animal."
People backed out of the way to give him a wide berth when Wolf reached the ledge at the top of the path and headed directly for Marthona's dwelling. One man knocked over several spear shafts when he bumped into them in his hurry to put plenty of clearance between himself and the efficient four-legged hunter. The wolf sensed the fear of the people around him and didn't like it, but continued toward the location Ayla had indicated he was to go. The silence within Marthona's dwelling was shattered when Willemar, catching sight of the entrance drape moving, suddenly jumped up and shouted,
"There's a wolf! Great mother! How did that wolf get here?"
"It's all right, Willemar," Marthona said, trying to calm him. "He's allowed in here."
Falara caught her eldest brother's eye and smiled, and though Joharan was still nervous around the animal, he could give her a knowing smile back.
"That's Ayla's wolf,"
Jondalar said, getting up to ward off any hasty reactions as Ayla rushed to the entrance to settle the animal who had been more scared than Willemar to be greeted by such loud, frantic noise in the place he had been shown to come. Wolf's tail was between his legs, his hackles were raised, and his teeth were bared. If Zelandani could have, she would have jumped up just as fast as Willemar. A loud, menacing growl seemed to be directed specifically at her, and she shook with fear.
Even though she had heard about Ayla's animals and seen them from a distance, she was terrified by the huge predator that had entered the dwelling. She had never been so close to a wolf. In the wild, wolves usually ran away from groups of people. She watched with amazement as Ayla fearlessly hurried toward Wolf, stooped down, put her arms around him, and held him, speaking words, only some of which she understood, seeking to calm the animal. The wolf first became excited and licked the neck and face of the woman while she fondled him, then did indeed calm down. It was the most unbelievable demonstration of supernatural power she had ever witnessed. Just what kind of mysterious ability did this woman possess to command that kind of control over such an animal? She felt goose flesh raise at the thought. Willemar had calmed down as well, with the encouragement of Marthona and Jondalar, and after seeing Ayla with the wolf.
"I think Willemar should meet Wolf, don't you, Ayla?"
Marthona said.
"Especially since they're going to be sharing the same dwelling,"
Jondalar said. Willemar gaped at him with an amazed look of disbelief. Ayla stood up and walked toward them, signaling Wolf to follow closely.
"The way Wolf gets acquainted is to become familiar with your scent. If you hold out your hand to let him smell it,"
she started to say, reaching for his hand.
The man pulled it away.
"Are you sure about this?"
he said, looking at Marthona. His mate smiled, then held out her hand toward the wolf.
He smelled her hand, then licked it.
"You gave some of us quite a fright, Wolf, coming in unannounced before you had met everyone," she said.
Willemar was still a bit hesitant, but he could hardly do less than Marthona had, and put his hand forward. Ayla introduced Wolf in the usual manner, saying for the man's benefit as the wolf took in his scent,
"Wolf, this is Willemar. He lives here with Marthona."
The wolf licked him, then gave a little yip.
"Why did he do that?"
Willemar asked, drawing his hand back quickly.
"I'm not sure, but perhaps he smelled Marthona on you, and he warmed to her very quickly,"
Ayla suggested.
"Try petting or scratching him."
As though Willemar's tentative scratching only tickled, Wolf suddenly curled up and vigorously scratched behind his own ear, bringing smiles and chuckles at his rather undignified posture. When he was through, he went straight to Zelandani. She eyed him warily, but stood her ground. She had been terrified when the wolf appeared at the entrance of the dwelling. Jondalar was more aware of her reaction than the others. He had seen her petrified fear. They had been concerned about Willemar, who had jumped up and shouted, and hadn't noticed the quiet terror of the woman. She was just as glad they hadn't. One who served the mother was thought of as fearless, and in fact, that was generally true. She couldn't remember the last time she had felt such alarm.
"I think he knows he hasn't met you, Zelandani,"
Jondalar said.
"And since he's going to be living here, I think you should be introduced to each other, too."
From the way he looked at her, she guessed that Jondalar knew how frightened she had been and acknowledged it with a nod.
"I think you're right. What is it that I'm supposed to do? Give him my hand?"
she said, thrusting it toward the wolf. He sniffed, then licked, then with no warning took her hand with his teeth and held it in his mouth with a low growl.
"What's he doing?"
Falara said. She hadn't officially met him either.
"He only used his teeth with Ayla before."
"I'm not sure," Jondalar said with a note of concern.
Zelandani looked sternly at Wolf, and he let go.
"Did he hurt you?"
Falara asked.
"Why did he do that?"
"No, of course he didn't hurt me. He did it to let me know that I have nothing to fear from him," Zelandani said, making no attempt to scratch him.
"We understand each other."
Then she contemplated Ayla, who returned her gaze.
"And we have a lot to learn about each other."
"Yes, we do. I'm looking forward to it," she replied.
"And Wolf still needs to meet Falara," Jondalar said. "Come here, Wolf. Come and meet my little sister."
Responding to the playfulness in his voice, Wolf bounded toward him.
"This is Falara, Wolf," he said.
The young woman quickly discovered how much fun it was to pet and scratch and handle the wolf.
"Now it's my turn," Ayla said. "I would like to be introduced to Willemar," she said,
Then, turning to the Danyer,
"And Zelindani, although I already feel that I know you both."
Marthona stepped forward.
"Of course. I had forgotten that you haven't formally met them. Ayla, this is Willemar, renowned traveler and trade master of the 9th cave of the Zelindanyi, mated to Marthona, man of the hearth to Farlara, blessed of Dani."
Then she looked at the man.
"Willemar, please welcome Ayla of the Lion Camp of the Mamutoi, daughter of the Mammoth Hearth, chosen by the spirit of the cave lion, protected by the cave bear."
She smiled at the animal.
"And friend of wolf and two horses," she added.
After the incidents and stories that Ayla had just told, Jondalar's kin understood the meanings of her names and ties more and felt they knew her better. It made her seem less of a stranger. Willemar and Ayla grasped both hands and greeted each other in the name of the mother with the phrases of the formal introduction, except that Willemar referred to her as mother rather than friend of wolf. Ayla had noticed that people seldom repeated introductions exactly, often adding their own variation.
"I look forward to meeting the horses, and I think I'm going to add chosen by the Golden Eagle to my names. After all, it is my totem," he said with a warm smile, and squeezed her hands before he let go.
She smiled back, a big, dazzling smile.
"I am happy to see Jondalar after all this time," he thought, "and how wonderful for Marthona that he brought a woman back to mate. It means he plans to stay, and such a beautiful woman. If they are of his spirit, imagine what her children will look like."
Jondalar decided that he should be the one to formally introduce Ayla and Zelindani.
"Ayla, this is Zelindani, first among those who serve the Great Earth Mother, the voice of Dani, surrogate of she who blesses, the Danyer, giver of help and healing, instrument of the original ancestor, spiritual leader of the 9th cave of the Zelindanyi, and friend of Jondalar, once known as Zolina."
He said the last with a smile. It was not one of her usual titles.
"Zelindani, this is Ayla of the Mamutoi," he began, and at the end added, "soon to be mated to Jondalar, I hope."
"It's a good thing he said I hope," Zelindani said to herself as she stepped forward with both hands extended. "This mating hasn't been approved yet."
"As the voice of Dani, Great Earth Mother, I welcome you, Ayla of the Mamutoi, daughter of the Mammoth Hearth," she said, taking both of Ayla's hands in hers and naming what to her were the most important titles.
"In the name of Mut, Mother of All, who is also Dani, I greet you, Zelindani, first among those who serve the Great Earth Mother," Ayla said.
As the two women faced each other, Jondalar fervently hoped that they would become good friends. He would never want either as an enemy.
"And now I must go. I hadn't planned to stay so long," Zelindani said.
"I have to go too," Joharan said, leaning over to brush his mother's cheek with his, then getting up. "There's a lot to do before the feast tonight. And, Willemar, tomorrow I want to hear how the trading went."
After Zelindani and Joharan left, Marthona asked Ayla if she wanted to rest before the celebration.
"I feel so dirty and hot from traveling. There's nothing I'd like better right now than to go for a swim, to cool off and wash. Does soap root grow nearby?"
"It does," Marthona said.
"Jondalar, behind the big rock upstream along the river, a short distance from Wood River Valley. You know where that is, don't you?"
"Yes, I know. Wood River Valley is where the horses are, Ayla. I'll show you the place. A swim does sound good."
Jondalar put an arm around Marthona.
"And it's good to be home, Mother. I really don't think I want to travel again for a long time."
Chapter 5.
"I want to get my comb, and I think I still have some dried ceanothus flowers left to wash my hair," Ayla said, opening her traveling packs. "And the chamois skin from Rosario to dry off with," she added, pulling it out.
Wolf was bounding toward the entry and back to them again, as though urging them to hurry.
"I think Wolf knows we're going swimming," Jandalar said. "I sometimes think that animal can understand language, even if he can't speak it."
"I'll take my change of clothes, so I have something clean to put on. And why don't we spread out the sleeping furs before we go?" Ayla said, putting down her towel and other things and pulling loose the ties of another bundle. They quickly made a sleeping place and set out the few other possessions they had with them. Then Ayla shook out the tunic and short pants she had been keeping aside. She examined the outfit closely. It was made of soft, supple buckskin, cut in a simple Mamutoi style, but was undecorated, and though clean, it was stained. Even with washing, it was difficult to get stains out of the velvety textured nap of the leather, but it was the only thing she had to wear to the feast. Traveling limited the amount one could take, even with horses to help with transport, and she had wanted to bring other things that were more important to her than changes of clothing. Ayla noticed that Marthona was watching her and said, "This is all I have to wear tonight. I hope it will be all right. I couldn't bring much with me. Rosario gave me a beautiful decorated outfit made in the Sharamadoi style out of that wonderful leather they make. But I gave it to Madinia, that young Los Adunai woman who was attacked so brutally."
"That was kind of you," the woman said.
"I had to lighten my load anyway, and Madinia seemed so pleased. But now I wish I had one like it. It would be nice to dress for the feast tonight in something a little less worn. Once we get settled, I'll have to make some clothes." She smiled at the woman and looked around. "It's still hard to believe we're finally here."
"It's hard for me to believe, too," Marthona said.
Then after a pause, "I would like to help you make some clothes, if you wouldn't object." "No, I wouldn't object at all. I'd appreciate it."
Ayla smiled.
"Everything you have here is so beautiful, Marthona, and I don't know what is appropriate for Zelandani women to wear."
"Can I help, too?"
Falara added.
"Mother's ideas about clothes are not always what younger women like." "I'd love to have help from both of you, but this will have to do for now," Ayla said, holding up her worn outfit.
"It will certainly be fine for tonight," Marthona said. Then she nodded to herself as though making a decision. "I have something I would like to give you, Ayla. It's in my sleeping room."
Ayla followed Marthona into her room.
"I have been saving this for you for a long time," the woman said as she opened a covered wooden box.
"But you just met me," Ayla exclaimed.
"For the woman Jandalar would someday choose for a mate. It belonged to Dalinar's mother."
She held out a necklace.
Ayla caught her breath with surprise and with some hesitation took the proffered necklace.
She examined it cautiously. It was made of matched shells, perfect deer teeth, and finely carved heads of female deer made from ivory. A lustrous yellowish-orange pendant hung at the center. "It is beautiful," Ayla breathed. She felt particularly drawn to the pendant, and she looked at it carefully. It was shiny, polished from being worn and handled. "This is amber, isn't it?"
"Yes. That stone has been in the family for many generations. Dalinar's mother made it into this necklace. She gave it to me when Jandalar was born, and told me to give it to the woman he chose."
"Amber is not cold like other stones,"
Ayla said, holding the pendant in her hand.
"It feels warm, as though it has a living spirit."
"How interesting that you should say that. Dalinar's mother always said this piece had life," Marthona said. "Try it on. See how it looks on you."
Marthona guided Ayla toward the limestone wall of her sleeping room. A hole had been dug out of it, and wedged into the hole was the round end that grew out of the horn core of a Megaseris, then extended and flattened out into the typical palmate antler. The tines of the projecting antler had been broken off, leaving a slightly uneven shelf with a concave scalloped edge.
Resting on top and leaning against the somewhat forward-sloping wall, but nearly perpendicular to the floor, was a small plank of wood with a very smooth surface. As Ayla approached, she noticed that it reflected with surprising clarity the wooden and wickerware containers across the room and the flame burning in a stone oil lamp near them. Then she stopped in amazement.
"I can see myself," Ayla said.
She reached out to touch the surface. The wood had been rubbed smooth with sandstone, dyed a deep black with oxides of manganese, and polished with fat to a high sheen.
"Haven't you ever seen a reflector?" Falara asked.
She was standing just inside the room, near the panel at the entrance, dying of curiosity to see the gift her mother was giving to Ayla.
"Not like this. I've looked in a still pool of water on a sunny day," Ayla said. "But this is right here, in your sleeping room." "Don't the Mamutoi have reflectors to see how they look when they dress for some important occasion?" Falara asked. "How do they know if everything is right?"
Ayla frowned in thought for a moment.
"They look at each other. Nezi always made sure Talut had everything on right before ceremonies, and when Dichi, she was my friend, arranged my hair, everyone made nice comments,"
Ayla explained.
"Well, let's see how the necklace looks on you, Ayla," Marthona said, putting it around her neck and holding the back closed.
Ayla admired the necklace, noting how well it lay on her chest, and then she found herself studying the reflection of her face. She seldom saw herself, and her own features were more unfamiliar than those of the people around her whom she had met only recently. Though the reflecting surface was reasonably good, the lighting inside the room was dim, and her image was somewhat dark. She appeared rather drab, colorless, and flat-faced to herself. Ayla had grown up among the clan, thinking of herself as big and ugly because, although she was thinner boned than the women of the clan, she was taller than the men, and she looked different, both in their eyes and her own. She was more accustomed to judging beauty in terms of the stronger features of the clan, with their long, broad faces and sloped-back foreheads, heavy, overhanging brow ridges, sharp, prominent noses, and large, richly colored brown eyes. Her own blue-gray eyes seemed faded in comparison. After she had lived among the others for a while, she didn't feel that she looked so strange anymore, but she still could not see herself as beautiful, though Jandalar had told her often enough that she was. She knew what was considered attractive to the clan. Ayla didn't quite know how to define beauty in terms of the others. To her, Jandalar, with his masculine and therefore stronger features and vivid blue eyes, was far more beautiful than she.
"I think it suits her,"
Willemar said. He had strolled over to add his opinion. Even he hadn't known Marthona had the necklace. It was her dwelling that he had moved into. She had made room for him and his possessions, and she made him comfortable. He liked the way she ordered and arranged things, and he had no desire to poke into every nook and cranny or bother her belongings. Jandalar was standing behind him, looking over his shoulder, grinning.
"You never told me Grandam gave that to you when I was born, Mother."
"She didn't give it to me for you. It was meant for the woman you would mate, the one with whom you would make a hearth to which she could bring her children, with the blessing of the mother," she replied, taking the necklace from around Ayla's neck and putting it into her hands.
"Well, you've given it to the right person," he said. "Are you going to wear it tonight, Ayla?"
She looked at it, frowning slightly.
"No. All I have is that old outfit, and this is too beautiful to wear with that. I think I'll wait until I have something appropriate to wear with it."
Marthona smiled and nodded slightly in approval. As they were leaving the sleeping room, Ayla could see another hole cut into the limestone wall above the sleeping platform. It was somewhat larger and seemed to go into the wall rather deeply. A small stone lamp burned in front, and in the light behind it she could make out from her view a part of the full rounded figurine of an amply endowed woman. It was a Danyi, Ayla knew, a representative of Dani, the great Earth Mother, and, when she chose, a receptacle for her spirit. Above the niche, she noticed on the stone wall, above the sleeping place, another of those mats, similar to the one on the table, made with fine fibers woven into an intricate pattern. She wished she could examine it closely, find out how it was made. Then she realized that she probably could. They weren't traveling anymore. This was going to be her home. Falara rushed out of the dwelling after Ayla and Jandalar left and hurried to another one nearby. She had almost asked if she could go with them. Then she caught her mother's eye and the bare shake of her head, and it made her realize that they might want to be alone. Besides, she knew her friends would be full of questions for her. She scratched on the panel of the next structure.
"Ramila, it's me, Falara."
A moment later, a plump, attractive, brown-haired young woman pulled back the drape.
"Falara, we were waiting for you, but then Galea had to go. She said to meet her by the stump."
They both walked out from under the overhang, talking animatedly together. As they approached the tall stump of a lightning-struck juniper tree, they saw a thin, wiry young woman with red hair hurrying towards it from another direction, struggling to carry two wet and bulging, fairly large water bags.
"Galea, did you just get here?" Ramila asked.
"Yes. Have you been waiting long?" Galea said.
"No, Falara came for me only a few moments ago. We were just walking here when we saw you,"
Ramila said, taking one of the bags as they started back.
"Let me carry your water bag the rest of the way, Galea,"
Falara said, relieving her of the other bag.
"Is this for the feast tonight?"
"What else? I feel like I've done nothing but carry things all day. But it will be fun to have an unplanned gather. I think it's going to be bigger than they thought, though. We may end up in the gather field. I've heard that several of the nearby caves have sent runners offering food for the feast. You know that means most of their cave want to come," Galea said.
Then, stopping and turning to look at Falara, she said,
"Well, aren't you going to tell us about her?"
"I don't know much yet. We're just starting to get acquainted. She is going to live with us. She and Jandalar are promised. They're going to tie the knot at the summer matrimonial. She's kind of like a Zelandani. Not exactly. She doesn't have a mark or anything, but she knows spirits, and she's a healer. She saved Jandalar's life. Thonalin was already traveling the next world when she found them. They had been attacked by a cave lion. You won't believe the stories they have to tell."
Falara chattered on excitedly as they walked back along the stone front porch of the community. Many people were busy with various activities related to the feast, but several stopped to watch the young women, especially Falara, knowing she had spent some time with the stranger and the returned Zelandani man. And some were listening to her, in particular an attractive woman with very light blonde hair and dark gray eyes. She was carrying a bone tray of fresh meat and affecting not to notice the young women, but she was walking in the same direction and staying close enough to hear. She had originally intended to go another way entirely until she heard Falara talking.
"What's she like?" Ramila asked. "I think she's nice. She talks a little funny, but she comes from very far away. Even her clothes are different, what little she has. She only has one extra outfit. It's very plain, but she has nothing for dressing up, so she's going to wear it tonight. She said she wants some Zelandani clothes, but she doesn't know what's appropriate, and she wants to dress right. Mother and I are going to help her make some. She's going to take me down to meet the horses tomorrow. I might even ride one. She and Jandalar just went down there to go swimming and bathing in the river."
"Are you really going to get on the back of a horse, Falara?"